Do not adjust your radio frequency. This is not a test. This is the Artist First Network. Cool.
Welcome, everyone, to the inaugural broadcast of the Pamela Folwin Show on Artist First Radio. All past shows are recorded. You can pick them up in podcast form at artistfirst.com. And now, out to your host, it's Pamela Folwin.
Hi, everybody. I'm glad you're listening to me. Again, this is Pamela Folwin with the Pamela Folwin Show. Whether you're listening live tonight or through the archives, I'm glad you're with me. I'm excited to be here tonight. And I'm going to talk to you about one of my favorite things in the world, pets. But first, let me back up and let me tell you a little bit about myself. I grew up in Plano, Texas, and I grew up in a house full of animals. I got my love of animals and my first knowledge of animals from my parents. They were wonderful in teaching me about animals and how to interact with them. And even though we had the dog and the cat in the house from a very young age when I was a child, I still wanted more. I thought it was like a menu, that we had to have one of everything. So I wanted a guinea pig and a rabbit and any other animal that I saw that caught my interest. I remember walking around the block as a child and rescuing any baby birds and trying to hatch, I don't know how many bird eggs that fell out of the trees, because I thought I could absolutely save everybody. I brought home more stray dogs and cats that my mom and dad would help me find homes or rehome with and reunite with their owners. So I have a strong, strong love of animals, and I know if you are listening to this show, you do too. As I entered high school, I started really enjoying my science classes and doing really well in science classes to where I was being pushed to become a veterinarian. Well, one summer of working in a vet's office taught me I didn't have what it takes to be a veterinarian. I sure admire people that do, but it just wasn't for me. So I got a biology degree from the University of Texas at Dallas in college and went on to be a dog trainer and work at pet hotels for the next 10 years. And I tell you, that was a great time in my life. It was so much fun to be around all those pets and all those pet-loving owners every day. But it's been my own house full of animals. And, yes, I do mean house full of animals. I currently have a dog, 5 cats, a guinea pig, and a fish tank here at the house with me. And they're all sitting here watching me as I'm talking to you tonight. But it's been this my own household full of pets that's inspired my writing and inspired my book series that I have out currently on Amazon. And so it's been a lot of fun to be on this journey. And this writing journey for me started when I found an abandoned litter of day-old kittens over 6 years ago. And yes, I still have all 4 baby kittens. Well, they're not kittens now, but I still call them my kittens. That experience was such an incredible experience for me that it inspired this book series called Megan's World, where I'm writing it to teach them, the young readers, how to care for pets and what it truly means to take care of a pet. And 13-year-old Megan has to do what I did. Mama raised an abandoned litter of kittens. And that is the ultimate task. You're feeding these little babies every 4 hours. I was so programmed to get up at 2 a.m. for the longest time. It took me forever to get out of that mode. But it was an incredible experience. And it's taken me on an incredible journey writing the children's books ever since. And my other book series is based on my real-life dog. My dog, Sonny, was smart. I called him a human in a furry body. And I was able to teach him to read And if you go to my website, PamelaFullen.com, you can find out more about all of this. So I want to get to the rest of what I want to talk to you tonight about. But that is the other picture book that I have out currently, Sunny from Outer Space. I had to explain Sunny's intelligence in some way that young readers would understand. And what little kid doesn't like outer space, right? So Sunny had to be an alien from outer space, disguised as Sunny the Shih Tzu, and had to come to Earth and figure out how to be a dog. But anyway, all this is to say that I love animals. They have given me lots of incredible ideas and opportunities and have taken me on an incredible journey and are such a joy to my life. So what I'm going to talk to you tonight about is this speech and presentation that I came up with this summer and have been doing to the Lions Club and Rotaries around the area. And this is all based on real life experience. This is all stuff that I learned growing up in Plano, Texas. So my presentation is called The Five Skills the Pets Can Teach Children, because I've seen it firsthand that you can use pets to teach valuable life lessons to children. My parents did it with me because pets were my biggest motivator. I would do anything to be able to talk to and play with the pets. And if you're anything like me, children would be asking for pets long before they knew what the actual meaning of the responsibility and taking care of them entailed. I know I was. If my parents had expected me to take care of my first pet, Gus, 100%, I think I might have had Gus about a week. But no, my parents didn't expect that of me at all. And so I enjoyed my first guinea pig, Gus, for the full length of his life. But parents do have to understand that children can't be expected to take on the full role and full responsibility of the pet. And they have to be taught what it means and taught at a level that is age-appropriate for them. So that's what I'm going to talk to you tonight about, is the five skills that I learned from working with the pets as I was growing up. And those five skills are responsibility, patience, trust, compassion, and self-esteem. And I've already told you, my first guinea pig, Gus, I got him for my 8th birthday. He was this cute little black, white, and brown guinea pig that I just love the way guinea pigs squeak. You rustle a plastic bag, and they think that you're in the refrigerator getting them some vegetables. And they just do the cutest little squeak that it makes me smile every time. So when I got Gus, I was very, very happy. And I learned responsibility from my mom helping me learn how to take care of Gus. And this is something that has stuck with me for the rest of my life, is this responsibility. Because you know what my mom did? She didn't expect me to do all the things that were required from us from the very first day. No, I had a great deal. I got to sit and hold and play with Gus while my mom cleaned the cage. And then afterwards, I would help refill the food and water dishes. But my mom was teaching me responsibility because it was the first thing I had to do the second I got home from school. And we all know, you get home from school, there's lots of other things you'd rather be doing, but I started learning responsibility because Gus was what I had to take care of before I was allowed to do anything else. And for 8 years old, that was about the level that I could handle. And it was a lot of fun because I would sit there and I would talk to Gus and I would pet him and he would squeak and chirp and look right back at me, and I thought that was great. Now, Gus lived for over 4 years, and by the end of his life, I was completely able to take care of him by myself, but I usually needed Mom's reminder when I got home from school that you need to take care of Gus, and I would, But I learned responsibility from doing this and learning how to take care of Gus, and that it was something that needed to be done every day. And I learned it at a level that was compatible with my 8 to 12-year-old being. And I learned what a joy pets can bring you when you are taking care of them and when you are the ones that are feeding them. Because let's face it, you can get to any pet's heart through their stomach. I swear that's sometimes why the pets just absolutely love you, but I don't see any of the extra work that I have to do with the pets as true work. I love every second of it. And my black cat, Salem, just came over to see me. Hi, Salem. I know. They're all sitting here listening to me on this first radio show of the Pamela Folan Show. So we're going to press on. The second skill I'm going to talk to you about is patience. Now, I got to pause here, and I know my parents are listening, and they're going to laugh because this was the absolute hardest skill for me to learn. And now that I've learned it and usually have a grasp of it, I can admit that openly. But patience was a very hard thing for me to learn. And it takes time and patience to bond with a new pet. When you bring a new pet into the house, they're going to be scared, especially a cat or a small animal. They're not going to want to play the first day. They're going to want to hide. As a matter of fact, I remember the first time I really had to learn patience. I had just started kindergarten, and we brought home a little gray kitten that we named O'Malley after the Aristocats. Well, we set O'Malley's carrier down in the kitchen. Mom opened up the crate door, and O'Malley darted out of the crate, down the hall, and under my parents' bed, to that special intersection of the bed where no human arms can reach him. And all I saw when I lay down to look under the bed was his little yellow glowing eyeballs staring back out at me. And I begged my parents, oh, please get him out so that I can hug and play with him. Please get him out. And my parents said, no, you have to be patient. He'll come out when he's ready. He's getting used to the house. And they, you know, tried to explain why I had to wait for O'Malley to come out from under the bed. Well, being 5 years old, of course, I could be distracted for a few minutes, but as soon as whatever had distracted me was over, I was back looking under that bed saying, please get O'Malley out for me. I want to play with him. I want to hug him. And my mom had to pull me out of the room again and say, no, we have to be patient. He's acclimating to the house. Well, I'd already heard this speech, and I really didn't see why he couldn't have already been acclimated. I had given him a whole 5 minutes, which, when you're 5 years old, seems like an incredibly long time. And so my mom sat me down, and she gave this very in-depth analysis that has stuck with me. And again, I just started kindergarten, so Mom asked me, well, remember your first day of kindergarten? Would you have rather had someone take you by the hand and lead you around the room, talking to you and showing you around the room? Or were you very happy to stand by my side and in the doorway and look around and then decide to join the class for yourself? And I remembered how terrified I was that first day of kindergarten and how happy I was to stay by Mom's side for just a couple extra minutes and get used to the idea of all the other kids and the teacher. And I said, well, of course I wanted to stay by you. And Mom said, okay, well, that's what we have to do with O'Malley, is let him acclimate and let him join in when he's ready. He's not going to like us pulling him out from under the bed and having you show him around the house and hug him and play with him right away. And I admit now, it wasn't that long before I was able to hug O'Malley and play with him and run down the hall dragging a shoestring and have him chase after it. This was my first bout of learning patience, and it's something like responsibility that we all use on a daily basis, but it takes patience to get that bond and that initial acclimation of a new pet into the household. Because once a pet feels safe with you, then you have their love for the rest of their lives. And let's face it, there's nothing like the unconditional love of a pet, but it does take that patience to get them there to want to stay in the house with you and to trust you, which is exactly the third skill I'm going to talk about tonight, which is trust. And trust is something that pets have to feel with every member of the family. And being a pet-loving child, I had to be taught the correct way to approach all these pets, because I saw a dog at the park and on a walk. I wanted to go up and hug and play and pet them all. Well, that doesn't always go over with every dog you meet, and children have to learn, one, to ask to pet the dog, and two, the correct way to approach a new dog or a strange dog. Because, believe me, the pet parents and the pets themselves will thank you if your children are approaching them the correct way instead of terrorizing and scaring them like I probably would have done had I been allowed to run up and hug every puppy I saw on a walk. But when we're talking about trust, I always think of our childhood dog, Maggie. Maggie was the best dog, the sweetest dog that we had for 13 years. And she was probably a Border Collie and German Shepherd mix. I'm not really sure. The vet never really could tell us exactly what all Maggie was mixed with. But she was a fantastic dog. And my brother and I were very, very young when we adopted Maggie. And our parents did a fantastic job of getting Maggie to trust not only them, but us and everyone in the household. And she would go swimming with us and go play at the parks with us, go up and down the slides. Maggie absolutely loved us. However, we did find out very, very quickly that Maggie didn't have this same trusting relationship with her first owners. Because Maggie was around a year old or so, probably, when we adopted her. And as long as we had her for the next 13 years, Maggie never forgot her first owners, because she would always run in absolute terror from anyone with short black hair or that was wearing a baseball cap. And it was actually very, very heartbreaking. Because when I was in middle school taking flute lessons, my flute teacher had short black hair. So my flute teacher would come in the house, and poor Maggie would go hightailing it back down the hall to the bedroom, just as far away from my flute teacher as she could get. And so that really, really imprinted in me at a very young age how important it was to have trust, to build that trusting relationship with an animal, and to make sure that it spreads to everyone in the household. Because Maggie sure loved us, but she really was fearful of my flute teacher, who never really did or said anything to Maggie, because she never saw Maggie. But it's very, very important to have that trusting relationship. And now, I thought Maggie might get over her fear of baseball caps when my brother started playing Little League. No, my brother and dad had to hold their hats in their hand until they got out of the house, or poor Maggie would just go absolutely terrified running from them. And like I said, it's heartbreaking to see an animal that doesn't trust as hard as Maggie didn't trust baseball caps and people with short black hair. And I remember when I was doing the dog training and talking to clients, telling them how important it was to build the trust in the dogs and to really always end the training session on a positive note with the dog. And I can't tell you how many times I told the story of Maggie to my training clients, explaining exactly that. So that's how I learned trust, is through watching Maggie and knowing how bad I felt for her, that she didn't trust her first owners, and how thankful I was that she was so trusting of us. So I'm going to go through the next two skills here. After we take a short break, I sure appreciate you listening to the Pamela Boland Show, and I'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Get ready, Jade. I've got a surprise adventure you're going to love.
Really?
We're going to swim with Sally the tiger cub. Even get a photo with her that you can share with all your friends.
I don't want to go, Mom.
Feel all right, Jade? I thought you'd love this.
I'm okay, but I feel terrible for those poor tiger cubs. Did you know that they're stolen from their mothers the day they're born?
What?
Yeah. How'd you feel if someone kidnapped me at birth?
Well...
And when the cubs do normal things like nip and paw, they're punished so they'll sit still for photos. And how would you feel if you were a baby and they pushed you into a deep pool to swim for your life?
I never thought about it that way.
And when they get too big to pet, they end up being imprisoned in tiny cages.
Where'd you learn all that?
From StopBigCatAbuse.com.
Studies show that children who learn compassion for animals show more compassion for humans. So teach your children well. Learn more at StopBigCatAbuse.com.
That's right. At 10 p.m. every second Wednesday on ArtistFirst.com, it's the worldwide internet show, the G.L. Henderson Radio Hour. Tune in to hear his special guests, from professionals, live topics, and get a blast from the past with musical legends like Lisa Lisa, The Temptations.
I know you want to leave me, but I refuse to let you go.
Manhattans.
Honey, you
Shanice, Shirley Murdoch, Dana Dane.
To make it interesting, it's me, Dana Dane,
Tina Marie, and more. Tune in to the G.L. Henderson Radio Hour, the king of relationship drama fiction. Every second Wednesday at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on ArtistFirst.com.
Hi, I'm James Baller of Artist First Radio, and I would like to tell you about a fascinating new book from Crime Beat's Ron Chepsik and co-author Mike Rowe. It's titled Robin Hood of the Hood, The Life and Times of Teddy Rowe, Policy Kingpin, and it's published by Strategic Media Books. The book is a historical account of Theodore Teddy Rowe, who courageously fought the Chicago Mafia, more commonly known as the Outfit, for control of the lucrative policy racket in the Windy City. Policy, often called the numbers, is a form of illegal gambling or illegal lottery, played mostly in poor and working-class neighborhoods in the United States. In Policy, a bettor attempts to pick three digits to match those that will be randomly drawn the following day. For decades, Policy had been a staple in the black community, but when the white mob flexed its power in the late 1940s, many policy kings knuckled under the pressure. Not Teddy Rowe. Rowe famously told mob bosses that he'd rather die than give up control of his operation. Robin Hood of the Hood chronicles an exciting chapter of Chicago history. Go to the Kindle store at Amazon and buy it for just $2.99. For information about this book and other titles, please go to strategicmediabooks.com. That's strategicmediabooks.com.
Hi, this is Les Hatley, and I would love for you to check out my new solo CD called Surge. Just go to my website at www.secondchair.com, and you are now listening to the Artist First Radio Network.
Thanks for joining us on the Pamela Follin Show on the Artist First Radio Network. Let's get back to your host. It's Pamela Follin.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for hanging with me through the commercial break. I'm excited to be back with you here, whether you're listening to me live or in the archives. We're discussing the five skills that pets can teach children. And these are skills that you use in everyday life and that I learned through firsthand experience growing up. So let's get back to it. The next skill I'm going to talk about is compassion. And this is something that I found completely fascinating and probably is why I wanted to be a dog trainer and go into dog training when I grew up, because I find pets' body language and how they communicate with us completely fascinating. And that is the first way that I started learning about being compassionate to animals, is my mom explaining to me that pets don't communicate in words. They use these body language and little signals to tell us what they need and what they want on a daily basis. And until I, you know, started talking to my mom about this in upper elementary school, I was convinced my mom had some sort of telepathic EST going with our dog and our cat, because they'd just be sitting there looking around and mom would say, go fill Maggie's water dish or go put more food in O'Malley's dish. I'm like, what? How did you know this? I don't understand. So mom started teaching me compassion, and with everything else that my mom had to do on a daily basis, taking me and my brother to all our various activities after school and taking us to and from school, my mom also had the pet activity and itinerary down to a science as well. She knew how long Maggie had been home alone, how long it had been since Maggie had been outside, and when the pets got fed, when the pet's water dish had been changed, all these things to not only be able to talk to me about being a compassionate pet care owner, but also very proactively showing me by example what it is to be a proactive, compassionate pet care owner, because Maggie and O'Malley never really had to ask for anything. Mom was on it, and Mom taught me to be on the ball and following through with what the pets needed as well, showing them compassion. Not making them wait to go for a drink and there only being a half an inch of sludge in the bottom of the water dish. Who wants to drink out of that? So I would, you know, change the water dish. And O'Malley, like all five of my cats do now, I don't know what it is about cats, but they see the slightest bit of silver in the bottom of their dry food dish and they stare at you like they're starving to death. The rest of the bowl can be filled with food, but they still want that little patch of silver to be covered with kibble. And then they're completely happy. So I learned compassion and the first cues and signals of pet body language and how they communicate from my mom, and then watching my mom interact with pets. And I still find that interactions between my own household full of pets and how they interact with me completely fascinating. And pets do need compassionate caretakers. So now, as much as I thought my mom had ESP and everything with our dog and cat growing up, I'm happy to say that I've got it with my guys, because I can be sitting in the house and whether grandma's over or I'm just here by myself, I'll see somebody look at me and be like, oh, it's time to feed them, or oh, I need to take my dog outside, or oh, I need to feed the fish. And so I kind of got DSP with my pets to some degree, too. And that's kind of exciting to me. But it's all part of being a compassionate pet owner and knowing what your pet's going to need and when they need to be fed, when they need to go outside or have litter box scooped or any other number of things that they need on a daily basis. And it's totally fun. They give back so much love and companionship to me that they're just great company. And I absolutely love my household full of pets that I remember saying from a very young age, I'm going to have a house of my own filled with pets one day. And yes, I still would take more and more and more. If I had unlimited space and unlimited funds, I think I would absolutely adopt everyone in the shelters. But that's another issue altogether. So we'll continue on here with the 5 skills that pets can teach children. The next skill I'm going to talk about is self-esteem. And now this one is really fascinating to me because if you had told me when I was in elementary school that I would be doing these talks and doing the book signings and doing everything I am as an author here, I probably would have laughed. I wouldn't have believed you for a second because when I started elementary school, I was very, very shy. I didn't talk to any of the other students. I barely answered the teacher's questions. I really didn't like the fact that Mom dropped me off every day and I had to stay in this strange place with all these other people for so long. But it wasn't until I got to third grade and our classroom rabbit, or our classroom had a pet rabbit named George. He was this big gray bunny that was the sweetest thing in the world. He'd let you pick him up and hold him like a baby, and he'd just lay there and look at you like, this is the life. Now, you all know I'm a huge pet lover. You figured this out by now, and I know that that was how I started to enjoy school, is because I wanted to go into my third grade classroom every day and see George and take care of George. I was thrilled when my third grade teacher assigned me to care for George for the week because I already knew. I had been, you know, learning from my parents at home and taking care of us, so I knew what to do and what George needed on a daily basis. And as much as my mom might have had to remind me coming home from school, we need to take care of Gus. You need to take care of Gus before you do anything else. Well, guess what? My teacher never had to remind me to take care of George. I got to class early to take care of George. I stayed after class to take care of George. And I started building a relationship with the third grade teacher because she wasn't having to be on me to take care of George. George was done. George was taken care of before she even thought to ask me about it. And when my week was up, the other students had noticed how well I was able to take care of George and how easily I handled him and cleaned his cage and changed his food and water. So they started asking me for help. How do I do this? Or what else did you do to take care of George, Pamela? And I started making friends, but we weren't talking about anything other than our classroom pet rabbit, George, which was my favorite subject in third grade. But it was a huge self-esteem boost because I went from a kid being not even really wanting to be in school, just kind of existing through the day in school, to loving being at school for 7-8 hours a day. I was starting to make friends. I had a different relationship with the teacher now. And it's amazing how much easier classwork is when you're actually in the moment, enjoying where you are, and paying attention to what the teacher is saying. So guess what? Homework got easier for me because I hadn't been staring at the clock or staring out the window all day. I'd been listening to the teacher. So homework was easier, and I wasn't struggling at night to get my assignments done so that I could watch TV or so that I could go do something else in the house. And that's a huge self-esteem booster. And you know what happens after you start improving your homework? It creates this huge, great snowball effect. Because then you start doing better on pop quizzes, you start doing better on tests, and what happens when the kid does better on their test? They get a better report card. I can't tell you how big a self-esteem boost that was to be able to show my parents such an improvement in my report card. And all because of our third grade rabbit named George. This all happened. And I kind of fell into my own way of being, of showing compassion and patience, not only with our classroom rabbit George, which is where I started, but as I gained confidence, I started doing it with the other students in the classroom, with the teacher. I was showing her that I was responsible and she could trust me to do as she asked. And it was this ginormous snowball effect that started happening, that I was using all these skills that I learned from taking care of pets, and I was starting to apply them to all areas of my life. I was starting to be more compassionate and patient with my brother and with my family, and it got to be where it was just completely ingrained in me. By high school, I wasn't even thinking about it anymore. This is just me. I will treat anybody, human or pet, the way I want to be treated. And I gained even more confidence that and self-esteem that I could handle whatever the situation was in high school, in college, and even now today. I treat everybody the way I want to be treated. And so I learned self-esteem from taking care and helping care for my third grade rabbit, George. And it's a great, great feeling because, let's face it, pets are about the most non-judgmental and best listeners on this earth. They just will sit there and listen. And yes, I know my pets sometimes roll their eyes and say, okay, Mom, shut up already. But they do listen to me very, very well. And usually will fall asleep if I talk too long, but that's okay. They don't criticize, they don't judge, so they are very, very good self-esteem boosters for children to talk to. I don't know how many conversations I had with Gus or Maggie or whoever other pets I had throughout my childhood at the house when I came home from a bad day of school. And who doesn't love having a dog greet you at the door? I mean, you come home to a dog bouncing and whining and wagging their tail. That's a huge self-esteem booster even as an adult. I love having Teddy greet me at the door. Just absolutely phenomenal. So, as you can see, those are the five skills that we talked about here that pets can teach children. Responsibility, patience, trust, compassion, and self-esteem. Now, pets can definitely be a huge teaching tool and a huge benefit to anyone who welcomes them into their lives. However, they have to be brought in with the right criteria. Again, if my parents had expected me to take care of Gus 100% at 8 years old, my first guinea pig, he probably wouldn't have lasted in our household a week because 8 years old, I wasn't ready for that. So parents do have to understand that the pets are going to be their ultimate responsibility, and they can use the pets to teach their children these skills, but it has to be done at a level that is compatible with the child's age. And the other thing is parents can't just go out and get their child a pet because their child's been asking and begging for a dog or a cat or a rabbit or a bird or whatever the case may be for 6 months, and the parents just want to give in to it. If the pet's not compatible with the household, then that's not going to be very much fun for anybody, whether you have full responsibility of it as a parent or you're just kind of playing with it and learning from it as a child. And what I mean by compatibility is this. If I was a runner, which I'm not, I hate running, I hate jogging, and just about anything in that same nature. But if I was a runner, I would not ever have gotten Shih Tzus as dogs, because little Teddy, my current Shih Tzu, he gets out in this Texas heat, and about 5 minutes out, he's tired, and he looks up at me like, I want to go home. And I say, great, let's go. And we turn around, and we come back to the house. Now, if I was a runner, that would really bother me. But since I get wore out in Texas heat just as fast as he does, we're completely compatible. We just turn around and come home. So that's what I mean by being compatible with the family, with the household, being able to keep up with a big family and an active family, getting the correct dog or cat or rabbit or whatever to fit into that household. It's going to make the pet and the family happier in every way for absolutely everybody. Because let's face it, if you don't have somebody, a pet that is compatible, it would be like having a stranger as a roommate that you had nothing in common with. And what fun is that? That's not any fun at all. So pets can be a great joy to their families and to children and to anyone in the household if they are brought in and handled in the correct way. But again, the parents have to take ultimate accountability for these pets. And one of my absolute favorite sayings is, there's nothing more compelling than saving the life of another being. And I absolutely love having the unconditional love of the pets and all the great lessons and all the great journeys that they have taken me on. So I appreciate you listening to this first episode of the Pamela Fullwin Show tonight. Whether you're listening live or on archive, I appreciate you being here with me. And until next time, have a great night, and I'll talk to you later.